You are listening to This Boy Elroy, episode number 13.
Hey Adam, this is Archer from ArcherRadio.com. I just finished listening to your episode number 12, and I just wanted to tell you that I really love the music in the background that you have playing, the Peanuts music by Vince Guaraldi, I think his name is. I really enjoy that music too, so I might have to be playing some of that on my show soon. Also, thanks for all the comments on my website for the shows. I appreciate your input and your part of the discussion. Anyway, I hope all's well. Talk to you later. Bye. Hi, Adam. It's Archer again. One more thing. I want to tell you that I really enjoyed the binaural microphone recording. I forgot to mention that before. Listening to you get yourself ready for work and hearing all the noise in the background, and then when you go outside, you hear the birds and stuff. It reminded me of John Ong's earlier recordings when he used to use the binaural microphone and we would hear him go to work. And anyway, it just brought back memories of some of John Ong's earlier shows. So I really like it. I love those microphones. They're really cool. Anyway, sorry to leave another message, but I wanted to tell you that. Bye.
Hey everybody, it's Adam, you're listening to This Boy Elroy, and you heard some messages there leading up into this episode from Archer of ArcherRadio.com. Go over to his site and please check out his podcast as well. I like his show. It's personal journal-y, and got away from the microphone there. It's very personal journal-ish. And it's great. And he talked about the comments and everything that I left. He had Remarkably Mark on his show, and they were talking about education and like the education system in the country, in this country, the United States. And I wrote a big long post about that. So sorry. My throat is sore. I hope I'm not getting sick. Right now, Brad is downstairs making himself a concoction of ginger tea, honey, and lemon to combat his sore throat. He taught today, and he said that right after his second class, his voice just about gave out. So my throat is feeling actually a little tingly right now. It wasn't when I came home, but we just went to Whole Foods and had dinner. I've been eating at Whole Foods so much lately. It's right behind my condo, our condo. So it's very difficult to resist to go. Very difficult to resist to go there to eat because their prepared food is so good. And lately, I've just been addicted to the carrot ginger soup. It's so good, and I'm gonna probably venture to make that on my own someday because it's delicious, and I get it every time I go there now almost. And but I have been cooking as well. I've been cooking. I haven't been completely bad. I'm very mellow today. So what's been going on? Last time you heard from me was a Friday, and like Archer said, I did the binaural recording, which was a lot of fun to do. There's something about that that's really interesting, and you know, I just love having fun with this podcast. It's my place to have fun, and there's something fun and interesting. And I think it's interesting when other people just record their day, the sounds that you hear. It's very interesting. It's the same pretty much for everybody, but it's also different. So that's why it's just interesting to me. But I love doing that because more so than when I'm just sitting here, usually I am right now, I'm just sitting up in my bedroom on the bed and just kind of relaxing. And I have I'm using my condenser microphone right now, not the binaural. And you know, it's fine to sit here and podcast, but it's when you're outside in the world, there's so many things that you see, hear, smell that, they can prompt you to start a discussion about anything. And that's why I think it's very interesting, you know, to do it like that, to do podcasting like that. But, oh, I exposed someone to podcasting that had no idea what it was. It was interesting. I was on like a chat site. It was gay.com, whatever. You know, I go on there to chat with people in Dallas just to make friends. I'm not a whore. It's disgusting. Those days are over, clearly. I used to be very adept at that, though. Yeah, in fact, there was even one time there was a bet. I remember, I think I'm getting sick. This sucks. I remember I was in visiting my friend Micah, and I used had her on my previous podcast, The Krebs Cycle, before. I was visiting my friend Micah in Irvine. I have to take these damn headphones off, okay? And, like, I don't know if we were stoned or drunk, one of those things. This was back when I was in college, so. And, you know, I told her, I was like, I guarantee you I could go online and just, like, hook up with somebody in like less than 20 minutes or something like that. And so I went on gay.com and I had some guy pick me up. It was like, you know, the thing is I didn't even live there, and she was shocked. She had no clue that it was that easy, I guess. I mean, she's not stupid when it comes to gay people. She was never ignorant of, you know, the intricacies of the gay lifestyle, I guess you could say, but I don't think she truly realized how easy it is for gay men to get sex and how quick it can be, how quick the acquisition can be. But anyway, what else is going on? So, yeah, I don't even know what I was talking about. I was trying to fill you in on my weekend, I guess. Friday, I just sat around, did nothing. Oh, there's a new episode of Real Men Wear Pink, so please go check that out at realmenwearpink.net. JT and I were having some scheduling issues, I guess you could say, and we finally ironed that out, and I'm really excited for him because, and we talk about this in the current episode of Real Men Wear Pink, but I have to just talk about some more because I truly am excited for him about this because I think it's so cool. He has joined a gay band, and it's so cool, and he's going to be playing the flute in the symphony there, and eventually I guess he said he'd be marching too, and he's going to be marching the piccolo, so that'll be really cool. And you know, maybe I'll take a trip out to Chicago for his Christmas concert or something. I said that to him. I don't know if I said that to him on the show or if I talked to, I spoke to him on the phone this weekend too, but oh God, speaking of my phone, I fucking love it. I know I mentioned it on my previous podcast. I don't believe I just said I fucking love it like I'm some teenager or something. Oh my God, I fucking love my phone. No, I really, really, it's like I've finally come into the 21st century because my other phones were so stupid. But I love this phone because it has Bluetooth and it also plays MP3s. And so what I was able to do is I was able to go into my iTunes library, and using Audio Hijack Pro, I was able to make little short clips from whatever song I want, basically, using Audio Hijack Pro, and then dragging them onto my phone and setting them as ringers. So it's a lot of fun. And, you know, I just love that phone. It's so great. The Motorola Pebble. Go check one out today at your local store. Just kidding. They're not paying me to say that, although they should. So I did some of that this weekend. Oh, Jesus. Hang on a second.
You will be.
Just kidding. Anyway. It's my Yoda voice. I have way too much fun with this. So what happened? What else happened this weekend? Nothing much. It rained Saturday morning. Oh, I love getting up early now. I'm waking up super early on the weekends now, and my days are full and long now instead of just sleeping most of the day. So Saturday it rained here, and then I realized that we need new doors, new French doors downstairs in the living room, which sucks. They're completely rotted through, and we should have seen that when we bought the house in February. And I mean, we did see it. They kind of did a botched up job. The people who were selling, they kind of did like a kind of cut and paste kind of thing to make the doors look like they were okay. They kind of sealed one of the French doors. There's two sets of French doors, and they sealed one set of French doors so you can't even open them. And you can see that there's been water damage on the floor. Like some of the wood planks on the floor are damaged from water. And we just didn't think, I mean, we thought the doors were okay and we'd be able to live with it for a couple of years or something before we had to get new ones, but turns out they need to be replaced, which sucks because they're not standard size doors and we need to get them custom made. And our neighbor had it done, and she had to have it done for like $4,000 or $5,000 or something. So that's a real bummer. And so we have to take care of that eventually at some point. But I can't remember what we did on Saturday. Anyway, it probably wasn't important if I can't remember what we did. And then Sunday I went out to brunch for a friend's birthday. That was nice. And then afterwards, another friend of ours who was at brunch, her boyfriend won first place in a photography competition here in Dallas. And his work was being displayed at the North Park. It's called North Park Center. It's a mall. But North Park is owned by this man named Raymond Nasher. And Raymond Nasher also owns a collection of sculpture called the Nasher Collection. And there's a sculpture center here in Dallas called the Nasher Sculpture Center. And it is one of the most impressive collections of modern sculpture. Modern in terms of modern art. It's not, you know, classical sculpture. It's modern sculpture. Tons of Giacometti, and I'm sorry for those of you that live in Europe and you're listening to this, and it's probably like I just scratched my nails down a chalkboard for you by saying Giacometti, and you're probably used to hearing Giacometti or something. I don't know. But anyway, there's that. There's Picasso, Miro, and, you know, just really, really famous sculptures there that, you know, when I went to it, I was blown away that they're here in Dallas. And in fact, this collection was the Guggenheim in Bilbao wanted to acquire the collection, but Nasher wanted to keep it here in Dallas. And so instead of having the Dallas Museum of Art do it, which he was afraid the city would botch it up, he built it on his own. Anyway, the man is a patron of the arts. And he owns this mall, North Park Center, which also houses a lot of art, a lot of modern art, original works, you know, by like Andy Warhol and, you know, just whatever, you name it, modern artists. And it's in the mall. It's part of his collection. So a lot of artistic expositions also happen at this mall. And so it's actually pretty neat. And artistic expositions that are done by artistic expositions of art that are done here in the community in Dallas. So we went and saw this. It was a graphic art and sculpture, you know, kind of exposition / contest. And my friend Dorothy, her boyfriend Jay won this competition, won first place for the best digitally modified photograph. So it was really cool. He took a picture of an amphitheater in, I think it was in Italy somewhere, and I forget who built it. It was named after some emperor, not Trajan, but anyway, I forget what it was called, but it was really cool. He modified it. It was like a night shot, and what he did is he kind of made like kind of neon outlines of all the arches and all the details, all the, what do you call them? The friezes, I guess. I don't know. It was a really cool photo. He modified it. And there were lots of other good photos there as well, and paintings. And and some not so good things, but you know, that's art. It's a matter of taste. It's all in the eye of the beholder. So, but it was nice to go to that. And so that's what we did on Sunday. And that's it. I can't really think of anything else that exciting that's been going on in my life. Oh, well, I'm kind of bummed out because Brad's going to be going to Australia. I'm getting sick. I can tell. I mean, I'm getting sick in the course of this podcast. I can feel my throat is starting to just give out. And this is not going to be good. Brad's going to be going to Australia for his sabbatical for the spring semester. So with his job, he's a professor. He gets to take either a full year off for sabbatical at this point in his career and get half pay, or he can take half a year of, one semester of sabbatical, half a year basically, and get full pay. So he's teaching this fall semester, but next in the spring, he won't be teaching. He's going to be on sabbatical. Then, of course, he'll have a summer vacation, but you know, sabbatical, you're supposed to go and work and interact with other people from in a different place. And it's kind of like an R&R session for an academic. But it's R&R. It's R&R for your academic mind, not like a pleasure kind of thing. But so he's going to take sabbatical, but he's going to be going to Australia. He's going to be going to Canberra, Canberra, Australia. I want to say Canberra whenever I say that, the name of that city, but I don't know why. I just want to say Canberra. I guess it's kind of like when people want to add vowels to my last name and they don't exist and I get really irritated. But anyway, he's going to Canberra, which is, of course, the capital of Australia. He's going to be at a university there. They are paying for half of his flight out there. They're giving him an office and they're giving him a place to stay free of charge. So it's a really great deal. And there's going to be other people there in his field that will be doing their sabbatical also. And some of them are just visiting professors at that university. So he'll be able to interact with them. And these are high profile people in his field. So it's going to be a very good opportunity for him. He's going to be there for 8 weeks though, which for me sucks. We've been apart that long before. He when we were about 2 years into our relationship, 2.5, 3 years into our relationship, maybe, I don't remember. He went on a similar kind of thing. He went to a National Endowment for the Humanities, like summer something or another, and he was gone for 6 weeks. And it, you know, I was in Tucson and he was in Santa Cruz, and I went out and I visited him for a weekend, and you know, it sucked, but I got through it. But I kind of said that I never wanted him to do that again. But, I didn't kind of say that. I did say that. I didn't want him to go away for that long again without me. Not because I don't trust him, just because, you know, I miss him. So, and I'm needy like that, to be quite honest. So, but not just for attention, specifically for his attention. So, it sucks. It sucks when he goes away like that. And I had planned on going out there for a couple of weeks towards the end of his time in Canberra. But the thing is the flight is so expensive. Just to get to Sydney is $1,500 right now. And from what I've been asking, round trip from Dallas to Sydney. And I've been asking around, there's a person where I work. He's Australian, and I asked him if that was a good price, and he said that was a very good price from Dallas, that it was very low, and usually it goes up because, you know, the seasons are reversed for those of us. Well, it's reversed relative to the Northern Hemisphere, so when it's winter here in the Northern Hemisphere, it's summer, so the peak seasons in Australia are different than they are here in the Northern Hemisphere. So the tickets usually go up in our winter. And so I'd be going out at the end of their summer, kind of. But anyway, it's $1,500 just to get out there, and that's just to get to Sydney. And the thing is if I'm going to go to Australia, I really want to go to Ayers Rock, also known as Uluru, which is that it's that big red rock that you normally see in commercials for Australia. It's very iconic. I mean, next to the koala bear, I mean, I think of it as, you know, one of the icons of Australia, next to, of course, the koala bear and the kangaroo. It's that red rock out in the middle of the desert. It's really cool. It's got all these Aboriginal, like, drawings on it and stuff, and there's all this kind of, you know, crazy, like, extraterrestrial theories about it and stuff. So, but anyway, it looks really cool. It's a major tourist destination. I want to go see that. But that, if you know the geography of Australia, and Australia is huge, it's a continent, and it's about similar in size to the continental United States. So this rock, Ayers Rock / Uluru, is in the middle of Australia in Queensland, and Sydney is in New South Wales. And a flight just from Sydney to this rock is $367 US round trip from Sydney. And that's just a lot of money on top of the $1,500 it already took to get out there, and then hotels. And then I also would have liked to have gone to see the Great Barrier Reef, and the city that you can fly into to go see that is Cairns, which is in Queensland, I believe. Yeah. I believe the rock is also in, maybe the rock, I don't think, is in Queensland. I don't know. I don't have the map up in front of me, but the Great Barrier Reef is on the northeast coast of Australia. And I really want to see that, because whenever I think of Australia, I think of the rock, I think of the Great Barrier Reef, and of course Sydney and the Opera House and koala bears and kangaroos. And it's just going to be so expensive to do all that. And Qantas does have a what's called an Aussie pass, where you can fly out to Australia, and then up to three cities you can fly within Australia, and based on these zones and stuff like that. And you can just buy one ticket, kind of like a vacation thing. But even that, after that's all said and done, that Aussie pass would cost me, you know, $2,000 just for airfare. So that cost, combined with, you know, hotels and the fact that we have to get new doors downstairs, and we also have an assessment coming up on our condo, it's just not doable. I mean, we can do it, but I don't want to. We can spend the money, but it doesn't mean that we should. And we really should save the money for other things. And it's kind of got me bummed out, because I would have liked to have gone to Australia, and I would have liked to have seen Brad sooner, and, you know, go to Australia with him and everything. And to me, Australia just doesn't seem like a place that I would want to just kind of hang out in the cities, you know, because we could just hang out in Canberra and Sydney, but how much of that can you do? I mean, if I was going to go to Australia, I'm going to take 2 weeks off to do this. I'm not just going to take, you know, a couple of days and make like a 20-hour flight just to hang out in, you know, in Sydney, which, I mean, I'm sure it's cool and everything, but if I'm going to travel all that way, I want to do it all and spend that money just to get out there. I want to do it all. It's at a threshold where it's at like a cost threshold for me, where if I'm going to spend this money, it's got to be, I have to get a lot in return for that. So, and Australia is, I mean, it seems like it's similar to the United States, because the cities are, they're modern cities. They're not, you know, like, oh, that's my phone ringing. I doubt you can hear it, because this condenser microphone, you probably can't hear it. But they're more modern cities, and it's not like when you go to Europe and the cities are completely just kind of alien and different than it is here in the United States. So, yeah, I won't be going to Australia, which sucks. But I think in lieu of that, what I'm going to do to break up the time that that Brad's away is, I've spoken to my friend Heather, and what I think we're going to do is, she lives in Los Angeles, and our friend Micah is in New York. I'm here in Dallas. What I think we would like to do is, the three of us haven't seen each other together in a really long time. We all went to high school together, and we're still really good friends to this day. We have not been together in a really long time. So I think what we're going to do is, we're going to all meet in New York instead. And that'll be like what I do, just to kind of break up the monotony so I don't go completely crazy in the 8 weeks that Brad is gone. So that'll be fun. And all I have to do basically is pay for airfare because my mom lives there, and you know, we can stay with her at her place, and it's not such a big deal. And I have other friends there also that if I needed to, which I don't, if I needed to, I could stay with them. But I have lots of options there, and I don't figure cost of food in because you have to eat no matter where you are. So who cares? And I eat out pretty much all the time now. So, so yeah, that's it. That's pretty much all that's been going on with me. Work's been crazy because, like I said, I think I mentioned this in my previous podcast. We have a grant due on October 1st. It's an R01 grant, which is those are the NIH grants, the National Institutes of Health. National Institute of Health, sorry. Why can't I speak? Those are big money grants, huge. And they're very, very competitive. They've always been very competitive to get. You have to do a proposal. You have to set out specific aims about what it is you're going to research and what the, you know, what this is going to accomplish and how it's going to benefit the scientific community. It's always been competitive to get these grants, but now it's even more competitive to get these grants because the budget for research has been slashed because of the war in Iraq and, of course, Afghanistan. But, you know, the cost of war is, I mean, it's really, I mean, we're feeling the effects. I mean, at my work, we're directly feeling the effects of the cost of this war that's happening, this illegal war that's happening. And, you know, it's, you know, we're really feeling it. There's not as much money for research as there used to be. And so you really have to be careful about waste. And, you know, I've only been really working in labs since after 9/11. And so it's always been, you know, the case that my bosses are very, very cautious about being wasteful and making sure that when you do an experiment, that something's going to come from it. So we have to be very aware of that and cautious. And so because there's a lot more competition now for these grants because there's just not as much money as there used to be for research. So and a lot of places are having to go to private sources for research grants, which is all well and good. But private grants don't give you as much money as these public grants give you. So, well, by and large, they don't. I mean, you can get little bits and pieces here, but you know, these R01 grants are huge amounts of funding. So, and they are the lifeblood of, you know, the research community in this nation. So it's really, really important. So we are scrambling to get our preliminary experiments, and my boss is not looking very healthy because he's been just trying to write this grant that is due on October 1st. So anything else going on? I want to reiterate again that I'm doing the AIDS walk here in Dallas also on October 1st, Sunday, October 1st, with my friend Jeff and, of course, Brad. Our group name is the Gaber Hoodies, and if you want to contribute, you can do so, and there is a link on show number 12. I'll put another link in the show notes to do that. It'll be a red ribbon, an image of a red ribbon, and you can just click on that, and it'll take you to the donation page. And also, I'm going to be doing another walk here in Dallas. And if you want to donate to that, I will eventually, when I get the information for this link, I'm going to be doing a lupus walk here in Dallas. And it's for the, what is it? I have the information right here. Choo, choo, choo. It's in my bag. Let's see here. Choo, choo, choo. I don't know what it's for. I mean, I should because this, the Alliance for Lupus Research, I don't think that that's it though. Maybe it is. Maybe it is this Alliance for Lupus. Anyway, it's for this group and I'm doing the lupus walk here in Dallas. It's a really good cause. You know, lupus is a really shitty thing to be to be afflicted by. It's an autoimmune disorder. It's you know, so far as we know, as you know, autoimmune disorders are not genetic, and no one's really certain exactly how they are caused, how they're triggered. We know how they work, but we don't know how they're triggered. You know, it's really just, I think that's still a mystery as to how they're triggered. But this charity that the Lupus Walk is for is really important to me because last year alone they donated $2 million to my institute. And so it's really important, you know, for me, it's in my best interest that this charity gets money because they do support research. And so they provided us last year with $2 million of our operating budget, which is pretty significant. So, and research costs a lot of money, but the benefits that come out of that money are also, you know, you get a lot in return for that money. So, and what else? Oh, I have this book out here because I wanted to talk about it, but I'm just going to talk about it briefly because this is getting a bit long. I'm reading this great book, and I just want to recommend this book. And I'm not trying to be all Oprah-ish about this, but I want you to read this book. It's so good. Anyway, you can go listen to her podcast if you want to hear her talk. Her and Gail, they're not lesbians. Anyway, it's a book. It came out in 2003, I believe. Excuse me. I'm burping. Sorry. It's called The Devil in the White City. It's by Eric Larson. It's a fantastic book. For people that are interested in architecture, if you're interested in architecture, it's a great book. If you're interested in murder mystery, it's a great book. And if you're interested in both of those, and or if you're interested in American history, it's a fantastic book. It's about the 1893. World's Fair that happened in Chicago, and basically Burnham, I forget his first name, I want to say Lester, I don't think it's Lester, Daniel, sorry, Daniel Burnham, who is quite a famous architect in the United States. He is the architect and builder of many famous buildings in Chicago, including the Rookery. And I think it's still there. The Rookery is still in Chicago. And also the Flatiron Building in Manhattan. And he teamed up with a lot of other really famous architects of the late 1800s. And also he teamed up with Olmsted, who is the designer of Central Park and also Prospect Park. And together they built this white city for the World's Fair in 1893. The World's Columbian Exposition is what I believe it was called. I can find out because there's a map. Anyway, so this book is about the World's Fair map. Sorry, I'm just thinking out loud. It was in the 1890s. I'm sorry. I think it was 1893, but anyway. The story is about how they built this city basically in a matter of, you know, a year and a half, 2 years. From nothing, and they made this grand city, and they were trying to trump the World's Fair that had happened in Paris, where the Eiffel Tower was what the Eiffel Tower was built for, basically, was the World's Fair. So, and they were, and the Eiffel Tower at the time was such an amazing, amazing accomplishment for the French people, because no one had built anything that tall since the Great Pyramid. The Eiffel Tower was the first man-made structure since the Great Pyramid, or was the first man-made structure to trump the Great Pyramid in height, which is pretty amazing because that pyramid was built thousands of years before the Eiffel Tower. So the United States and Chicago in particular, very much so Chicago, wanted to do a fair that was going to outdo that fair. You know, this is the American spirit, of course. We can do it better and we can do it bigger. So that's exactly what they did. And they put on this World's Fair. They built this white city from nothing. So it's a story about how they built the city, but it's also a story about a serial killer who existed in Chicago at the time of the fair and kind of used to his advantage all of the people coming to Chicago for the fair and basically killed them. And it's all of this, the whole story, the book is based on factual events. It's not a work of fiction. The serial killer who existed, H.H. Holmes was his name, actually, you know, he was a real person. All the quotes that are in the book are based on letters. What is astonishing about this book is that the author has paid such close attention to detail and has extracted a brilliant and just captivating narrative from letters and documents. And he has all of his letters and documents in at the end of the book, and they're indexed according to chapter. All of the letters that he got the quotes from, all of the documents that he gets his facts from, everything. And it's amazing that he's able to tell this story of how the fair was built, and also the story of this serial killer that existed during the time of the fair. And it's really, really fascinating. And some interesting facts, too, that I learned that I never knew were associated with this. I mean, I knew that there was this really great World's Fair in Chicago, but I did not know that it was the place where the very first Ferris wheel premiered. So there's that fact. Also, the Pledge of Allegiance was created in honor of the World's Fair, because the guy who wrote the Pledge of Allegiance, I forget what his name was, but anyway, he wanted like the children of America to give something for the fair, you know, to contribute something to the fair. So he created the Pledge of Allegiance for children to say that they pledge allegiance to the United States. So, and of course, when it was written at that time, it did not include under God. Just a little fact. So there's that fact. The Pledge of Allegiance was created for the fair, the Ferris wheel. Oh, and also the tune that you hear, like when you hear like belly dancers or snake charmers, that, you know, that little tune that you always hear, that was created as a kind of song for belly dancers that were imported from Algeria to dance to, actually. And it was created by this guy, his last name was Bloom, I don't know, he was the guy who ran the midway at the Chicago Exposition. And he created that song in a press conference that he had for these Algerian belly dancers before the fair opened. There was a press conference because no one in the United States had seen belly dancing before. And it was so different and almost scandalous to them that it was like a porno show for them. And it was just like this huge thing. And when he arrived at this press conference, all they had was a piano for these belly dancers to dance to. And so on the fly, he created this little song. And, you know, that song. And it became kind of just the leitmotif, or the song that you always hear whenever you see a belly dancer or a snake charmer. And it came from the Chicago World's Fair. And I just think that's really interesting. So it's a great book, The Devil in the White City by Eric Larson. So, all right, everybody, I'm sorry this went so long, but I had a lot to say. Thanks for listening. You can leave a message on my Chingo, like Archer did. Thank you very much, Archer. On my website, which is thisboyelroy.com. You can also email me at thisboyelroy@gmail.com. And if I don't respond to your email, email me again and tell me that I'm an idiot for not emailing you back. Because I have a tendency to read emails and I'm like, oh, I'm going to write them back, because I read them at work, and then I don't do it. So please just nag me or something. So it's not that I'm ignoring your emails, but sorry. And you can also leave a comment on thisboyelroy.com. So I hope you enjoyed this, and I will talk to y'all later. Take care of yourselves. Bye-bye. Oh, great white city, I've got the adequate committee. Where have your walls gone? I think about